This is The Crisis Point.
Welcome to The Crisis Point podcast, where, like G.K. Chesterton, we discuss nothing except for politics and religion because, well, there's nothing else to discuss. I am your host, Michael Warren Davis, the editor of Crisis Magazine, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Phil Lawler, the director of the Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture at the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts. And we thank you for joining us. On the roster for today, the Vatican has renewed its controversial China deal for another term, and also a victory for the church in San Francisco, where it has been beleaguered by civil officials who are trying to suppress the mass. But first, a high-ranking cardinal was dismissed from the Curia over a burgeoning, or we should say long time, but Vatican scandal, a finance scandal that is just now coming to a head. And Phil, how do you pronounce that cardinal's name? Is it Becciu?
I believe it is Becciu, yes.
Like a sneeze.
I hope it is.
So why don't we begin on that topic? And Phil, being an expert Vatican watcher, knows a lot more about this than me, so I will let him take the lead. Phil, what do we have to know
about? Well, thank you. It's typical of the Vatican that Cardinal Becciu was dismissed from his position as prefect of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, and stripped of his privileges as a cardinal, although he still remains a cardinal. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, it's worth it.
But the Vatican announcement said only that those things had happened, not why. Right. So we're left to fill in the blanks ourselves, and the blanks are pretty large.
A statement by Cardinal Pell, who many believe was set up in the recent sham trial that he suffered through, have suggested. Cardinal Pell seemed to suggest that Becciu was indeed complicit in this financial scandal, and that he was, you know, that justice was served by his being removed from power. So that seems to confirm, at least to any reasonable person, that that yes, indeed, there was this entrenched corruption that went all the way to the highest levels of the Curia, to some of the most powerful
Right. Cardinals
in the church.
Yeah, there was nothing in the Vatican statement to tell us, but there's been plenty in the news Yeah. In the last over a year, and the news has been full of information about Cardinal Becciu and how he, in his position, his earlier position as the Deputy Secretary of State, what's commonly called the Sustituto, he had been engineering loans, financial deals without authorization, although it wasn't a secret. He was doing it without authorization, apparently lost quite a bit of money. And then more recently, it came out that he'd also been steering contracts towards his brother's firm.
Oh, wow.
For which he was unapologetic, a very Italian sort of manner. He said, well, why wouldn't I? I knew my brother's firm. They do good work.
Sure. Worse than a corrupt prelate is a corrupt and incompetent prelate.
Well, there's that. So there's very little doubt that that's what was in mind. And then just this week, the Vatican followed up announcing that a special prosecutor had been appointed, and typically not saying why, but there is every indication that it's to look into the case of Cardinal Becciu.
So I have two questions that that may or may not really be answerable at this point. But so first of all, Becciu was worked for the Secretariat of State, as you mentioned. Do you know if he was still coordinating this these bad deals from the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints, or did he begin the process and then was sort of shuffled out and then left all that business behind?
I believe the latter.
Okay.
Some of the charges against him go back even further, apparently to time when he was the Apostolic Nuncio in Cuba. And apparently at that point he was steering some business towards his brother, or so the charge goes.
Wow.
I have not heard anything about anything wrong happening under his watch at the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. But again, nobody tells us.
Sure. Right. Well, that's pretty shocking. So we you know, I had never really heard of Becciu's name except for in the context of the Causes of the Saints, which isn't a hugely relevant department of the Vatican for most lay people. Not in the way that the Secretariat of State is, in the sense that, you know, the church deal with the churches deal with China, and the Vatican finance scandal is always in the news. We very rarely hear about the Causes of the Saints. So I'm curious, you know, who so for instance, Cardinal Parolin, he must have known about all of this.
Yes, he did know, and he had issued statements earlier that suggested he was supporting Cardinal Becciu. Oh. They were sort of ambiguous, but they were a supportive statement. And yeah, so he doesn't look terribly good in this. But, you know, just for the benefit of people who are listening here, the Deputy Secretary of State, it's not like the Deputy Secretary of State in the U.S. The sustituto's job is more like the job of a chief of staff. He handles all of the paperwork for the Roman Curia. He is the only Vatican official who meets with the Pope pretty much every day.
Wow.
So, and he can pulls all the strings. This happened a few years ago before he was made a cardinal, but the sostituto, who he's never a cardinal, he's always an archbishop. He's a very, very powerful figure at the Vatican.
Wow. So he went, so in my mind, I bet you just went from like a C-list bureaucrat to really a major player in the Catholic hierarchy.
Absolutely. I would say the sostituto is probably the third most powerful man at the Vatican. Wow. And I say probably because maybe he's second.
Wow, that's incredible. I never knew that. Well, that's good to know. So that really changes everything. And I wonder, Phil, if you put any credence in the theory that you've probably heard thrown around that Cardinal Pell, who, to remind listeners, though I'm sure they know, was sort of the church's man that was supposed to be cleaning up the Vatican finances. Some have alleged that when he got too close to Becciu, possibly some organized crime connections, you know, sort of orchestrated this kangaroo court, no pun intended, in Australia, that tried to tar, you know, Cardinal Pell with these horrific and absurd charges of child, you know, child sex abuse, that, you know, were prima facie, again, just ridiculous, but which really almost stuck, got way, way further in the court system than they should have. So, Phil, do you think that there is any connection between Becciu and the Melbourne court system or the Victoria, state of Victoria and Australia court system?
It certainly is suspicious. I have no evidence to suggest that there is a connection, except the evidence of my nose, you know?
Yeah.
It's awfully suspicious that, well, first of all, there is no secret about the fact that Archbishop Becciu was stalling Cardinal Pell's reforms at the Vatican. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And as Cardinal Pell began nosing further into some things, such as the suspicious real estate deal in London that Archbishop Becciu was behind, it was at that point that suddenly prosecutors in Australia took an interest in Cardinal Pell and dredged up this complaint from years and years earlier. The timing is very suggestive.
Wow.
That's all I can say.
So what do we know about this going forward? What's the next step? Or is this another case where we just have to, you know, assume the Vatican's going to, you know, quote unquote, take action, which means that they're not actually going to take any action at all. And we're going to just hope to, they're going to hope that we forget all of this in a couple of months.
Well, they'll certainly do that. That you can count on. But there is this special prosecutor. So apparently criminal charges will be brought at the Vatican against the cardinal.
That's incredible.
The cardinal who is no longer acting as a cardinal.
Yeah. Wow.
And there are also criminal charges in the Italian system. In fact, I kind of wonder whether the Vatican sort of hustled to get ahead of the breaking news from Italy of prosecution.
They want to sort of,
these are criminal, you know, they're possible charges of fraud and who knows what else.
So the Vatican was probably trying to sort of take the case away from secular prosecutors who would have probably gone much further and dug up more dirt that they definitely don't want dug up.
Well, we'll see. The secular prosecutor, as far as I know, is still going ahead.
Good. Okay. Well,
and then there's another angle, because this week, coincidentally, the MoneyVal Committee, which is an international group of banking inspectors, began their one of their periodic inspections of the Vatican finances. That's very, very important because MoneyVal is a sort of international authority that gives you the green light or the red light in terms of being clear of money laundering in support of terrorism and so forth. And you'll recall that a few years ago, the Vatican was on their blacklist and has got off the blacklist and onto the whitelist, but last time MoneyVal did one of these visits, they said the Vatican has done quite well in putting in new safeguards on financial transactions, but not well at all in prosecuting people who violate the standards. So they're going to want to see, I think it's safe to say, MoneyVal will want to see a prosecution here.
Yeah.
And yeah. It can't be secret, I think. We will see more of this. The other possibility, of course, is Cardinal Bichu is a very high-ranking man. He has protested his innocence, and he might implicate other people.
Wow. This might bring down Parolin, for instance.
It could. I have not heard that he was involved, but it could.
Wow. Well, let's come back to that as the news develops over the next couple of months. We'll definitely stay on top of that. But in the meantime, there is really big news out of the Vatican that the church is renewing its power sharing agreement with the Communist Party of China. And this was particularly disastrous for the faithful in China, of course, because the communist regime has been viciously persecuting Catholics for decades and decades and has only been rewarded for it by Rome, by this increasing, you know, coddling of the regime and an insane amount of deference, even as the persecution ramps up. And listeners, I'm sure, will have seen the photos of the heroic Cardinal Joseph Zen, who went to the Vatican to meet with Pope Francis and was refused an audience. And there were all these really sad photos of him sort of walking around empty Vatican, empty because of coronavirus, everything shut down. And it's this heartbreaking snapshot of the state of the church right now. You know, one lone, holy, you know, sort of God-fearing martyr of not only of the regime, but of Vatican corruption, in the eternal city, which looks by all accounts to be dead, to be the ruins of a once great city, a once great church that is not looking so good these days. So Phil, what are the renewed terms of this agreement, and what does it mean for China's Catholics?
Well, what are the terms? I have no idea. It's secret.
Unconditional surrender.
Well, it sort of looks it, but. Yeah. You know, the Vatican has never disclosed the terms of the deal. And I don't expect that as the deal is renewed that we'll be hearing again. To me, it's a signal that Cardinal Zen could come to Rome knocking on the Pope's door, begging for an audience, and couldn't get an audience. Yeah. And what does that mean? By the way, we spoke about the privileges of a cardinal.
Yeah.
If the privileges of a cardinal don't include getting a meeting with the Pope when you're desperately asking for one, I don't know what they are. I mean, he's supposed to be one of the Pope's trusted advisors. And this, right. It's frankly, I find it unforgivable. Yeah. Why would you not meet with him? And everybody knows that he is critical of the deal. Everybody knows that he has special expertise in this area.
Exactly.
And he has complained that the Secretariat of State is not listening to him. By the way, notice we're talking about the Secretariat of State again.
Yeah.
A different office within. It's the Vatican seems determined to go ahead with the deal regardless. And so, you know, don't tell us anything that we don't want to hear because we're going to make this deal anyway.
It's a particularly tricky situation. And it took me a while to figure out the whole situation with the two churches in China. So I'm going to summarize it very briefly. So because a lot of people think that there are sort of two separate hierarchies, but that's not exactly true. The Chinese Patriotic Catholic Association is really more of that. It's an association. It's kind of an umbrella group or an interest group that, you know, bishops join as a sort of a gesture of fealty to the Chinese communist regime. So if a bishop becomes a member of the Patriotic Association, he doesn't necessarily, he should theoretically automatically lose the support of Rome. But you know, it's not a separate sect or a separate institution. It is, again, it's just an association. And China is very sneaky about this, and they have several times since the founding of the Patriotic Association, they have taken Rome's approved bishops and coerced them into joining the Patriotic Association. And so there's this canonical gray area where you don't know who they're necessarily loyal to. Are they just trying to go along to get along with the government? Or have they been, you know, re-educated into hardened regime loyalists? And the latter is very often the case. A lot of times these bishops do actually go through really serious re-education and they come out, you know, willing mouthpieces of the communist regime. And so it seems from a helicopter view, like, you know, the Vatican is reordaining or sanctioning bishops that have been sort of out of union with Rome, and they certainly haven't been out of union with Rome in the sense that they are often consecrated and ordained without Roman approval. But you know, to share power, what we mean by saying that they're sharing power with the regime is that effectively they're sanctioning members of the Catholic hierarchy or new members of the Catholic hierarchy to belong to this Communist Party controlled pressure group. And if they're members of this pressure group, then fundamentally they're taking orders from the communist government. It's not a nominal thing by any means. This is basically like the part of the section of the Communist Party for Catholic bishops. That's what the Chinese Patriotic Catholic Association is. It's unambiguously falls under the power of the Communist Party regime. They answer directly to the secretariat, the party secretariat. And so, again, it's not just like, you know, the church is appointing bishops that the regime is okay with. They're appointing bishops theoretically that are under the direct control of the communist regime. It's even more nefarious than a lot of people realize.
Right. And of course, it's not just the bishops. You have orders coming down from the Patriotic Association that parish churches have to play the national anthem at Mass. They're replacing pictures of the Pope with pictures of Chairman Mao.
Yeah.
It's not subtle. No. And as you say, there are priests and still a few bishops who of the so-called underground church who have not been recognized by the government and are arrested by the government, taken away, and subjected to pressure to join the Patriotic Association, to conform to the regime. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure to conform and to obey.
It's hard to, because you keep thinking of new horrible things to say, it's hard to even encapsulate all of this. It is re-education, but it's also often torture. It's imprisonment, it's starvation. You know, re-education itself is, you know, it's grueling, but they do everything that they possibly can to break the will of these bishops and to turn them into regime loyalists, and they succeed very often. So again, you know, you sort of get there's the parallel to what goes on in Vietnam, where the Pope or the Vatican recommends three candidates and lets the government choose which one is acceptable, and that's wicked dubious anyway. I mean, that's another parallel in, power sharing thing. But this is, again, this goes way beyond the pale. This goes way beyond anything that has ever happened in the history of the church. It's like saying, it would be almost like the church telling the members of the, like, you know, John Paul II telling members of the Polish hierarchy that they had to join the Communist Party in Poland, that they had to, that they were under obligation to put up pictures of Stalin or whoever on their walls and to sing the Soviet anthem. It's madness and totally unprecedented. And don't listen to anyone that tells you otherwise, because it's just not true. And this is the Cardinal Zen knows all of this and a heck of a lot more. And he wanted to confront Pope Francis about this. And he wasn't allowed to, and he's not even allowed to give his side of things. Cardinal Zen's antithesis, of course, is not only Cardinal Parolin, it's former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, who led the negotiations with Beijing in the early stages of this agreement being formed. So you have this one deeply holy, Chinese cardinal bishop who is leading the charge against the Vatican deal, and then you have these two very corrupt bureaucrats, Parolin and McCarrick, formerly leading the Vatican side, people who have, you know, have no experience whatsoever with China, nothing good anyway, and that's the situation. And again, we talk about all the time the low point in church history, but this is pretty awful. This really is pretty awful.
It's painful to see this week the U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, was in Rome. And he was in Rome having just published an article in First Things magazine, yeah, in which he sort of scolded the Vatican, yeah, saying that the Vatican has a great opportunity here to take a stand for religious freedom. And why is that not happening? It's a great opportunity missed and a deliberate, you know, default on the Vatican's role as a moral leader. Yeah. And it's no surprise that Pompeo also was not able to see the Pope while he was in Rome.
I remember when I was, oh, sorry.
Just after the publication of that article, I think he's not going to be invited to Vatican garden parties anytime soon.
but Patrick Mama will. I remember when I was a younger man, sort of just getting my bearings in politics and things, I read an essay by William F. Buckley about Richard Nixon, and it was titled something like, "Is Nixon One of Us?" And by us, Buckley meant an anti-communist, and he said that basically the thrust of it was that Nixon's meeting with Mao and with the Chinese communist authorities basically precluded him from being a conservative. Because to be a conservative fundamentally is to be an anti-communist. And I remember reading that. Again, I was in my teens. And I remember thinking to myself, well, then really no conservative in America would qualify as a conservative, because they're all in bed with the communists, with the Chi Coms. I almost want to say it's the same thing with Catholics. You can't be a Catholic without being an anti-communist. It's part of church teaching. You cannot be a Catholic and not be an anti-communist. And it's kind of sad to say that, you know, it's hard to say who in the hierarchy is actually an anti-communist anymore. It's also really hard to say that Mike Pompeo and Donald Trump, who are not Catholics — I don't think Pompeo is Catholic, I could be wrong about that — but Pompeo and Trump are anti-communists. And if we're looking for leadership on how to deal with the Chinese communist state, which is very probably the most brutal and evil dictatorship in the history of the world, you know, you can't look to the church, but then again, you can't, it doesn't seem like you can look to the bishops for much of anything anymore.
Yeah, it's just very sad that you have a secular government official going to the Vatican to try to convince the Vatican to protect the rights of Catholics. But that's exactly what's happening, and he's unsuccessful in doing so.
Well, Pompeo has really been a champion on this, and you know, as difficult as it is to see you know, conservative leaders in America squaring up against Catholic leaders in Rome, you know, thank God someone is speaking out for the Catholics in China, because they need a spokesman. And if Cardinal Zen's not being heard, and because Cardinal Zen is, you know, sadly, he's only as powerful as the people in Rome that are listening to him. He himself can't do anything. But, you know, if he has Trump's ear, if he has Pompeo's ear, or if, you know, if they're even if they're working separately, if they're working towards the same goal, which is to take a moral stand against the various persecutions that are being carried out by the Chinese regime, then we say thank God for that.
Absolutely.
So let's end on a bit of good news, because I think we all, it's not unmixed good news, but it's or rather it is sort of mixed. But so Archbishop Cordiglione, who is in my view probably the best bishop we have in the United States right now, has been fighting this arduous legal battle against the secular authorities in his diocese, Archdiocese San Francisco, who were really, really trying their hardest to suppress the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. So I think before the most recent agreement, it was something like 9 people could be in a church during Mass, and that included the celebrant. I think it was even less than 10. And so now they're allowed to operate at something like 10% capacity or 25%, something very, very small. But there was this victory in a sense, wasn't there, Phil?
Well, I guess it's a victory. There was a ban on Mass indoors. You could have Mass outdoors for 12 people. Archbishop Cordiglione had been very aggressively protesting and encouraging people to write to the mayor and protest. I was frankly unsatisfied with that, because I thought he should have ignored the order, gone into the cathedral and celebrated Mass.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a question of religious freedom. He is the Archbishop of San Francisco. He is the only person in San Francisco who has the proper authority to say when and where the liturgy of the Catholic Church should be offered. And since the order was, I think, blatantly illegal, I don't understand why he asked for it to be lifted. I think he should have just pushed the issue. But be that as it may, he was not as confrontational as I would have been. And he is now happy that the mayor has said the churches can have congregations up to 25% of their capacity, up to a limit of 100 people. So even in the cathedral, which is huge, you can only have 100 people at Mass at any one time.
That's insane.
100 is a lot more than zero. So I guess that's a bit of a victory. By the way, in this new order, the mayor is only giving to churches the same standing that she gave to restaurants, which can also have up to 100 people. So it's not that the churches are getting special recognition. It's that they're not being singled out for punishment. So I suppose you can call that a victory. It's certainly not a loss anyway.
Sure. And Cordiglione did say, you know, the fight is far from over. And I think that he would like to say, I think in his letter he said, we want greater capacity. We're willing to use face masks and to, you know, frequently sanitize. We'll put in proper ventilation. So, you know, I think that he wants to not to irritate the secular authorities too much. I would probably be in your camp. I would probably say to hell with the secular authorities. But he's trying the diplomatic route. And frankly, I mean, when you see what's been going on in California, because this was just, it was just last year or the year before that we were talking about the government trying to force priests to break the seal of the confession when they were privy to something, you know, some sort of sexual abuse information. So if there was any question and left in anyone's mind, the government of California is explicitly anti-Catholic. It is actively persecuting the church, and little wonder that that's Kamala Harris's home state.
Right. And the state, we're talking now about the restrictions in the city of San Francisco. The state of California still has a restriction of a cap of 100 people in any religious house of worship. And again, some, you know, there are places, there are churches that can easily accommodate 1,000.
Right.
And even with COVID restrictions could accommodate far more than 100. So it's an arbitrary singling out of what should be a protected activity.
Yeah, that's the word. It's arbitrary. It has nothing at all to do with preventing the spread of Wuhan flu. It's about the state proving that they can violate the First Amendment rights of Americans, that they can trespass on the sacred and absolute liberties of Holy Mother Church, and there will be no repercussions.
Archbishop Portaleone made a point of saying that there is no evidence of any transmission at a Catholic Mass ever.
Anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. Anywhere. As you basically just pointed out, obviously the risk of transmission would be much higher in a restaurant than it would be in a church. You know, people are facing each other in a restaurant. They get in much closer proximity by necessity. Even if the coronavirus was as communicable as some say that it is, and I'm not a scientist, I don't know, but it would be so much easier to prevent the spread of any kind of communicable disease in a church than it would be in a restaurant. That's common sense. But we are a society that values consumerism over religion. And we are also a society that has more expectations of comfort and leisure than we do of worship. And so that, I guess in a sense that was inevitable. It's evil and it's stupid, but it probably inevitable. The restaurants were always going to come before the churches.
I suppose so. It's therefore cold comfort to see that we're on a par with the restaurants.
Only because there was the threat of legal action, only because it was going to go to the courts and they were, in 20 years, we won't even get this. Unless something really dramatically changes, at least in California, if anything like this happens in 20 years, the churches are just going to be kaput. You just forget about it. It's not going to, that's the direction that the country's moving in. It's so amusing when you get these leftists that talk about how if we repeal Roe v. Wade, it's going to be like The Handmaid's Tale, whatever that stupid show is. It wasn't like The Handmaid's Tale before. Why would it be like The Handmaid's Tale after? You know, it's just this total lack of... The left really does think that the country is moving to the right at this rapid, insane pace, that we're moving towards this Christian fascist state. It's insane for anyone who has any sort of historical perspective to look at the current situation in the United States and not see that we are, as Rod Dreher says in his excellent new book, we're creeping towards a soft anti-Christian totalitarianism. It's just happening. It's observable, not least of all in California.
Well, California is a special case, but you promised to end on an upbeat note, and I'm not sure we're doing that.
Oh, right. Any other good news? Amy Coney Barrett, that's good.
That's good news. Well, we'll see about her confirmation hearings. I'm delighted with the nomination. I thought that maybe the president would steer clear of it because everybody was ready. She was predicted. She was expected. So I'm sure the left has come up with all the ammunition they have, and maybe they just haven't been able to come up with much.
That was the fun thing, was Massimo Fagioli. What was he writing in? Was it Slate or something? Salon, I think. And he was talking about how people of praise is a religious order like Opus Dei that takes secret vows of obedience and stuff like that. And this was like the whole thrust of his article. And they had to issue a correction saying that people of praise, Opus Dei did not take secret vows of obedience or of anything else. And so basically the correction undercut the entire article, which is that Amy Coney Barrett is basically a member of some weird religious sect. And you know, this is, if that is the most ammunition they have against her, then she's free and in the clear. You know, Pierre Delecto has even said that he's going to vote for her in the Senate. So I think that's good news. I mean, it looks, I'm going to knock on wood if there's anywhere around here, but it looks like it's in the clear.
I hope so. We'll find out in a few weeks.
Yes, we will. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this week, but as always, I'm very grateful to you for joining us. And until next week, I thank you again. And I am Michael Warren Davis. He is Philip F. Lawler. And this is The Crisis Point. Thank you all, and God bless you.